I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today is an episode of the Weekly Docket, which, as you know, if you've been listening for a while, is a segment I like to do each week where I just recap the top headlines in true crime for the week. However, this week's Weekly Docket is going to be a little bit different because I'm really going to focus on one huge evolving story that is just dominating social media right now. So if you follow me on Facebook, which my name on there now is True Crime Kelly, or Instagram, Mama.MysteryPodcast, or TikTok, Mama.MysteryPodcast, you may have already seen this story in a few of the videos that I've done, but I'm going to break it down for you start to finish here. Y'all know my style. I like a clean story start to finish with as much detail as possible so that you guys know all of the details. So buckle up, because this one is like a rotten onion of just layer after layer. Let's get into it. Rebecca Kay, or Becca Park, was 22 years old, living in northern Michigan and just days away from becoming a mom for the third time when she vanished. She was tiny, about 5'2", around 140 pounds, 9 months pregnant, brown hair, brown eyes, with very visible tattoos. She had the word Queen written above one of her eyebrows, a butterfly on her neck, a Winnie the Pooh tattoo on her arm, and some flowers on her ankle. She stood out in a crowd, and everyone who knew her says the same thing, that she loved her kids, and everything in her life in November of 2025 really revolved around getting ready for her baby boy. But Becca's story is a bit complicated. She grew up in what her adoptive mom describes as a middle-class family in a very nice situation, yet as an adult, she was kind of orbiting a really dark group of people. She was adopted at a very young age and then reconnected with her biological mom later on. And by the time that she went missing, she was bouncing between homes, surrounded by multiple adults who, according to a detailed case blog that pulled public records, were on the Michigan Sex Offender Registry, including her fiance and her stepdad. And we're going to get into all the cast of characters in this story. But one thing I want to make sure I make clear is that when Becca was very young, she was actually removed from her home and placed with a foster family and then ended up being adopted by this family. She was removed from the home with two of her biological siblings, one of them being her sister, Kimberly Park. So we're going to talk more about Kimberly as we get into this story. But to really understand what happened to Becca, we have to start with her families, plural, and then work our way into the night that she disappeared, and then, of course, the arrest that followed. So her adoptive mom is Stephanie Park, and Stephanie says that she adopted Becca when she was about 1 year old, along with her younger sister Kimberly and then an older brother. She raised them in the Cadillac Manton area in what she describes as a stable, loving, middle-class home with grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, the whole big family picture. Stephanie has been very clear. She considers herself to be Becca's real mom. She says that they stayed quiet early in the case to protect the grandkids and not interfere with the investigation. But once Becca's body was found, she finally spoke publicly. She talked about Becca as a loving person who also at times struggled with mental illness and, you know, had some of her own problems. I've seen reports that, you know, Becca had two little boys. One was about 3.5 years old and the other was about 2 years old. And those boys were already in Stephanie's care before Becca disappeared. And Stephanie is also caring for Kimberly's baby daughter. Now, Becca reportedly understood that she wasn't in a place to parent full time and wanted her sons to be raised the way that she had been, in a stable, safe environment with her adoptive parents. So whatever the plan was for this new baby, I believe that she planned to raise this baby with her fiance, and we're going to get into all of that, but I do believe that this baby she intended to keep and raise on her own. So that's kind of the picture from the adoptive side. And now we're going to get into her biological family. So this all centers around her biological mom, Courtney, who appears online under several names over the years, including Courtney Tichnell, Courtney Fox, and now Courtney Bartholomew. And Courtney's husband is Bradley, or Brad Bartholomew. So Brad is technically Becca's stepdad. Now, Becca had reconnected with her biological mom, Courtney, as an adult. In early November of 2025, shortly before she disappeared, she was actually staying at Courtney and Brad's home on South 21st and a Half Road in Boone Township, which is a rural area in Wexford County, Michigan. That is the address that everyone keeps coming back to. It's where she was last definitively seen alive, and it's near where her body would eventually be found. Now, Brad is described in official documents as Becca's stepfather. He has no biological relation to her whatsoever. Public case summaries and registry checks compiled by the Unsealed Evidence blog show that Brad is a registered sex offender in Michigan, and he's been given a habitual offender enhancement on his current charges. Unsealed Evidence, the blog, also identifies Faye G. Strong as Becca's biological father, also listed on the sex offender registry, though he has not been publicly named as a suspect in this case. So from just the immediate biological family side, you've got Courtney and then Brad, the stepdad, and a lot of online chatter about their pasts with multiple Facebook profiles and criminal histories that make people very uneasy, especially when you remember that Becca was 38 or 39 weeks pregnant. Let's talk about Becca's fiance. Her fiance is Richard, or Richie Lee Fowler. He's 43 years old. Remember, Becca's only 22, and he is Becca's fiance and the father of her unborn baby. They'd been together a little over 2 years and were living together in the Manton area before she went to go stay with her biological mom. Now, in one of his early interviews, before any arrests, Richard told 9 and 10 News that he and Becca were inseparable, and that even when she wasn't physically with him, she was always in contact with him by phone. He describes her as being 38 weeks pregnant, due around November 18th, and says that they had actually gone to the hospital the day before she disappeared because she was having contractions and thought that she might be in labor. And they did check her. She was 1 centimeter dilated, so in those early stages of labor, but not active labor yet. So she was sent home to wait for active labor to begin. Public records summarized by People and like People Magazine and the Unsealed Evidence blog show that Richard is also on the Michigan Sex Offender Registry. And after Becca's body was found, he was arrested on 2 counts of delivering methamphetamine, with prosecutors labeling him as a habitual offender as well. His bond was set at $1 million cash, with the possibility of GPS house arrest if he were to post it. But as of right now, I want to be very clear, he has not been charged with homicide or anything directly related to Becca's death. The drug charges are separate, and officials haven't publicly tied him directly to the murder, even though he is obviously deeply connected to her life, and then, of course, the last days before she vanished. So just a side note, this is going to sound so random. I realize that. But in my spare time, if I have downtime, I love to puzzle. And as I'm putting together these puzzles, I'll often turn on interrogation videos and just listen to interrogation videos because I just find them all so interesting. The reason I say this is because it's my personal opinion that based on the videos I've watched, the police probably detained Richard Fowler on those drug charges so that they could question him more easily in regards to Becca's disappearance. Oftentimes you'll see people of interest or people who are close to an investigation be arrested on separate charges so that he is at least detained and where they want him so that they can question him. So I know in the beginning when Becca disappeared and then he was arrested on drug charges, people were automatically assuming that the fiance probably had something to do with it. And that could still be the case. But I just want to be clear that the only charges he faces are related to drugs. Now, Becca's younger sister, Kimberly Park, is 21 years old. And like I said, she was adopted along with Becca and their brother by Stephanie when they were small. And as adults, she appears to move between the adoptive family and the biological family circles, just like Becca did. Kimberly has now been charged with tampering with evidence in a criminal case, lying to a police officer during a violent crime investigation, and filing a false report of a felony. Her bond is set at $750,000 cash surety with GPS house arrest if she somehow posts it. She probably won't. But it does appear that Kimberly has some sort of knowledge of whatever happened to Becca if she's blatantly lying to police about it. So it just makes you wonder what her involvement was in Becca's disappearance. Also worth noting is that right before Becca disappeared, she inherited $2,000 in cash, and she had this cash on her when she allegedly disappeared after leaving Courtney's house. And I'll get into like the details of exactly what happened that night, but I wanted to introduce you to all the characters first. So like I also said, Becca has one brother, and between the siblings, there are multiple young children, two sons of Becca's, Kimberly's baby daughter, and they are all being cared for by Stephanie right now. So when you zoom out from just the immediate family, Becca's wider circle gets even more tangled. The Unsealed Evidence blog timeline pulls public records and social media posts and points out that five people in Becca's close orbit are on the Michigan Sex Offender Registry. So obviously her fiance, Richie, her stepdad, Brad Bartholomew, her best friend's mother, Jennifer Ronk, and then of course Jennifer's husband, which is her best friend, Paige's stepdad, Isaiah, he's also on the Sex Offender Registry, and then Joseph Aiton is a roommate who shared a Manton area address with Becca and Richie. He is also on the sex offender registry. So she's obviously not surrounded by very many decent people. According to that same blog, Becca's best friend Paige is Jennifer's daughter. Paige and her mom were very active on Facebook about Becca's disappearance. They were sharing updates, organizing searches, talking about a safety plan that Becca allegedly had with them if she ever felt unsafe. Again, none of those extra people have been charged in Becca's death, but it just gives you a sense of the environment that she was living in. A pregnant young woman, two little boys already placed with her adoptive mom, and then a circle of adults with serious records and complicated relationships. So let's get into the timeline just before she disappeared. In late October of 2025, things looked like they were getting close to baby time. Her due date was, like I said, November 18th. Her adoptive mom, Stephanie, says that the last time she spoke with Becca was on Halloween, and they talked about trick-or-treating and wished one of her children a happy birthday. But after that, there were no calls. Becca had been spending more and more time at her biological mom Courtney's home on that South 21st and a half road in Boone Township, just outside of Cadillac, and multiple reports say that she was staying there in the days leading up to November 3rd. On November 3rd, Becca reportedly received $2,000 in cash from a family inheritance, possibly from a grandparent. And then investigators have said that there has been no card or account activity since she went missing. So whatever money she had seems to have been in cash. At the same time, everything about her life publicly looked like she was nested in for the baby. She had been in the hospital for contractions. Her fiance says they're, you know, constantly in touch. Friends say that she's preparing for her son's arrival, like clearly not planning to just disappear. So the last confirmed sighting of Becca alive was reportedly late on Monday, November 3rd, outside of Courtney and Brad's home. According to both law enforcement and interviews that were given by Richard, her fiancé, around 11:30 p.m., Becca is outside her mom's house when a dark-colored sedan with tinted windows pulls up. Becca then reportedly told her mother, quote, "Hold on, I got somebody to pick me up. This is just something I gotta do. I'm sorry," end quote. Now, this is all allegedly from her biological mother. Courtney says she gets into the front passenger seat of that car. No one gets a clear look at the driver. And shortly afterward, Becca's phone is found discarded on a two-track road across from the house, a remote little dirt road in the woods. Everyone who knew Becca, including Richard, says that she never went anywhere without her phone. So that was the first huge red flag. There's no more digital activity, no texts, no calls, no social media, no bank or card transactions, nothing. For a 9-month pregnant 22-year-old in 2025, that silence was immediately alarming. So Richard says that he reported Becca missing on November 6th, 3 days after that last sighting. And I know you're probably wondering what took so long, and I think everyone is. But from there, the Wexford County Sheriff's Office and Michigan State Police start searching the area around Courtney's house and that two-track road. The Sheriff's Office put out multiple public updates. They confirmed that Becca is considered an endangered missing person. They say she voluntarily entered a vehicle that night, as far as they knew at the time. They confirmed that her phone was found near where she was last seen. And they publicly address rumors saying that they were not in possession of bloody clothing, because there was a lot of chatter online, as there typically is with cases like this. And so they were really asking people to stop spreading unverified claims online because it was hindering the investigation. Community members from volunteer search groups, which was like people bringing ATVs, drones, canines, grid searches, they scoured the woods and two tracks around Boone Township and Cadillac. And some of those searches were coordinated with law enforcement. Others, like a recovery team, were more independent. But as the days drug on, Becca still was not found. Friends were organizing vigils, including one on what should have been her due date, November 18th. Her adoptive family stayed mostly silent publicly, trying to shield their kids from the media. Online, the case exploded. On TikTok, Facebook groups, and Reddit, people were picking apart every last detail. The phone pinging, the dark sedan, the complicated relationships. And there were a lot of people that were going on TikTok live and confronting her biological mom, Courtney, and I believe Brad, in like the front yard of their home. And I mean, you have to kind of understand, like, when you're talking to people like Courtney, I mean, you're really kind of talking to a brick wall, because this is not a person who has more than two brain cells to rub together. She's just like a trash human being. And if you think I'm being harsh, just wait until I tell you the end of this story, okay? Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day. And then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule.
special. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A.
And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Because you'll very much agree. But these people on TikTok were going to Courtney's house and confronting her with some of the inconsistencies in her stories. And apparently, like, people from this area kind of knew Courtney's reputation. And I think from the get, because of just her past behaviors, they all assumed, like, something is off with this woman and she probably had something to do with this. So I'm going to play a clip. There is some profanity in it. So, I mean, just beware. And hopefully it's easy for you to understand. But here's the clip.
Kimberly wants to come get her stuff. I thought she came in Thursday to get it.
I was going to take it to her tonight, but after leaving the sheriff's department, I was pretty pissed off.
So did they
tell... Hey, Brent, you want to take her shit to her?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, so Rich, Courtney's cousin's going to take Kimmy's stuff to her, so if anybody's got contact with Courtney, or Kim, I'm sorry, Kimmy, I apologize, please let her know that Rich is going to have her stuff.
Hey, Courtney, can I ask you a question? If you knew the stuff about Kimberly asking about the trails and all that, why is it just coming out tonight?
I didn't know till tonight when my husband brought it out after he took a polygraph.
You said that you knew just a minute ago.
So Brad, you knew?
Yeah, I didn't think anything of it.
You didn't think anything of it when she's been missing all this time to mention something like that? There's people pointing out hats and socks on the side of the road because they think it might be relevant. That shows your
you
lack.
You guys have got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it is.
It is a lack. It is a total lack of care. The one person that was supposed to protect her and you didn't.
Put it together till tonight.
Put it together.
When he was asked about it.
Where did you take the lie detector test?
I went to Greenland.
Okay.
Where'd... I went to Muskegon.
Okay. All right. Did you take yourself there or did they take you?
They took us.
So as you can hear, these people who are approaching Courtney and Brad at their house are really kind of fed up with Courtney and Brad and just their whole involvement in the case. And for some context on why they feel this way, reportedly some of the volunteers were out searching various areas. And at one point they were searching a compound. And when Courtney got word that they were searching a compound, she called the police on these volunteer searchers. So these searchers were like, why would you call the police? Like, why are you interfering? We're trying to help you find your daughter. And during one of the confrontations, here is what Courtney had to say.
Courtney, we hope that your daughter is found and your grandbaby is found.
I hope to God too.
No, you don't.
But with Kimmy saying what she's saying, that's not gonna happen. My daughter is never gonna come home.
You know that. You just said it in your heart.
You know it because you did it, bitch.
So again, another confrontation outside of Courtney and Brad's property. And I think it kind of gives you a good idea of like who we are dealing with here. Okay. I'm trying to be careful with my words. I'm not trying to be judgmental, but like you guys know who we're dealing with. So November 25th, exactly 21 days after she was last seen, a search party goes back out to the Manistee National Forest near Boone Township, which is really close to Courtney's house and the area that everyone had been focusing on from the beginning. And then in a gut-wrenching twist, it's actually Becca's father from the park side, so like the adoptive father, who ends up finding her. He later tells reporters that he located her body off of a two-track road near her biological mother's home. She was reportedly only about 15 feet off the road in an overgrown wooded area. That same night, the Wexford County Sheriff's Office and Michigan State Police held a press conference. They confirmed that a body had been found that appeared to match Becca. They also say that the body was located in the Manistee National Forest in Boone Township, and they emphasized that they were waiting on an autopsy for official identification and cause of death. And then, of course, within a few days, the autopsy confirmed what everyone already feared. The report actually said Rebecca was no longer pregnant, and that's all they said. So everyone was assuming that the baby was nowhere to be found. Because this was so, you know, talked about and just like inundated on TikTok, there were multiple people who would go on TikTok, like these volunteers. They would go on TikTok live and talk to each other. They would go on live and like share feeds with one another, almost kind of like a live stream with multiple people talking at the same time. And Courtney was even sometimes a part of those live streams. But because it was so present on social media, some of the volunteers actually spoke out immediately after Becca was found. One of the volunteers had actually seen her in the woods, had actually spotted her like before the police arrived and confirmed that her stomach was cut open. So obviously this has not been confirmed by police, but it was confirmed by volunteers that were there. So you can take it however you want. But right after Becca's body was found, obviously the focus suddenly shifted to the people that were closest to her. And just hours after her body was found, her fiance, Richard Fowler, was booked into the Wexford County Jail. He was eventually charged with 2 counts of delivering methamphetamine, and he was labeled a habitual offender, which means he could be facing a possible life sentence for that. His bond was set at $1 million. But again, this was not in connection with her death. Then in the early hours of November 26th, Becca's younger sister, Kimberly, was arrested and booked into the same jail. And later that day, she was arraigned on tampering with evidence in a criminal case, lying to a police officer during a violent crime investigation, and filing a false report of a felony. Her bond was set at $750,000, and she was also described in court as a threat to the community and a flight risk. So at that point, people were wondering, what's going to happen with the biological parents? Why haven't they been arrested yet after all this weird interaction they've been giving with the cops and, you know, people, the searchers and whatever? She was giving differing stories, varying details with these stories. Like, clearly Courtney had something to do with it. And so a lot of people were wondering, you know, why hasn't she been arrested yet? Well, finally, on December 2nd, the Michigan Attorney General's office and the Wexford County prosecutor announced what everyone had been bracing for. But I think even I was stunned to find that, like, this was their involvement. Courtney Bartholomew and Bradley Bartholomew were both arrested and charged in connection with Becca's death and the death of her unborn baby. So they are alleging that Courtney and Brad lured Becca at 38 weeks pregnant to their Wexford County home. They then forced her into a vehicle and took her into the woods. In the Manistee National Forest, they allegedly stabbed her, forced her to lie on the ground, and cut her baby out of her womb, causing the deaths of both Rebecca and the unborn child. The charges against both Courtney and Brad are almost identical: first-degree premeditated murder, felony murder, torture, conspiracy to commit torture, assault on a pregnant individual causing miscarriage or stillbirth, conspiracy to commit that assault, unlawful imprisonment, and removing a dead body without permission from the medical examiner. Brad also got a habitual offender fourth offense notice, which significantly increases his potential sentence if he is convicted. At their arraignment, the prosecutor told the court that this was a heinous case, about as heinous as you can imagine, and that Becca and her baby endured unimaginable suffering. The judge ultimately agreed and denied bond for both Courtney and Brad, ordering them held without bail and banning them from contacting each other while they're in jail. I also want to point out that the prosecutor said that evidence suggests they had been researching this, that they conducted research. And so I'm curious just exactly what that research was. My inkling tells me that they were researching how to perform a C-section, essentially. And ultimately, the question we're all asking is why? What would possess somebody to do this? Well, an ex-relative of Courtney's posted this on Facebook, so you can take it with a grain of salt, but this person appears to be related to somebody that was married to Courtney at one point. So this is what the post says. It says, quote, "When Jason officially divorced Courtney, we thought we were going to be free of her crazy. We were so wrong. When they were married, Courtney consistently displayed incredibly violent behavior and continuously made up fake pregnancies, twins, triplets, and then would say she miscarried. She had my brother arrested after throwing herself down the stairs, would consistently abuse him, told my mother multiple times that he had committed suicide when in fact he had not. Courtney is a pathological liar. She was sending text messages saying she had a baby in the NICU when she didn't. Meanwhile, her biological daughter was full term and is now missing. Rebecca and her sister were adopted when they were very young, and legally speaking, Courtney has no legal affiliation to them, like next of kin, in parentheses. Rebecca K. Park has been missing since November 3rd. The last person she was seen with was Courtney. There are searches and protests. If you're local to the Manton, Boone, Cadillac, Messick area, please consider joining. And if you remember how things were when she was with Jason, you know exactly where my mind is at." So clearly, insinuating that her plan might have been to steal the baby and then pass the baby off as her own, maybe. I mean, I really don't know what her plan was. It's really hard to reconcile with someone like Courtney Bartholomew. I can't. So that is just what I'm assuming was probably her plan. I think it's absolutely sick that the stepdad, Brad, had something to do with this as well. People are so sick, man. I can't wrap my head around it. And I really, this whole story is just so sad, because obviously everyone who was in Becca's circle that was supposed to protect her, her sister, her fiance, her mom, her stepdad, these people were supposed to protect her, and they are the ones that ultimately dragged her down and then obviously caused her death. So that is where this story stands. As of today, December 3rd, at the time that I'm recording this, they were just arraigned. And it's worth noting that Courtney has a lot of medical conditions. She's missing a leg, which I think is important to note, because obviously she could not have done this all by herself. So clearly Brad had something to do with this as well. This whole story actually eerily reminds me of a really disturbing true crime documentary that I watched a long time ago. I think it's called Goodnight Sugar Baby. Let me double check that actually. Okay, it's called Goodnight Sugar Babe, and it's a true crime documentary that details the horrific murder of Vera Jo Regal, a mentally challenged young mother, and the subsequent failure of the justice system to hold all the conspirators accountable. And the film heavily focuses on this small-town crime family and its matriarch, Sherry Brooks, who is also known as Sugar Babe, who apparently orchestrated the abuse and the eventual killing. And this killer, Sugar Babe, apparently had a fascination with female babies, and she was also like a predator, a child predator in her own right. I mean, the story is so disturbing. Don't watch it unless you really can't handle some sick stuff, because it really is so disturbing. But this case just kind of reminds me of that. Like, they even look alike, Vera and Courtney. But anyway, that is all we have so far for this particular story. I just wanted to make sure I got out ahead of it so I could give you guys all the details, because I have a feeling this is going to go crazy. I guess we'll see what she ends up, what she ends up pleading, guilty or non-guilty. We should, you know, obviously have more information as more details come out. But I'll follow this closely, because I think everyone is just emotionally invested in this, because it's just so impossible to understand. With all that said, if you ever have a request for a case or a story that you want me to look into, mamamystery.com is my website. You can go down and send me a message, but make sure you're letting me know who you are if you want me to know who you are, because I've been getting a lot of messages from anonymous people that don't seem to want to be anonymous, but I can't track these messages. So anyway, have a great weekend. Austin and I are actually heading to Sedona this weekend to do a little bit of hiking. So I'm very excited to get a little away time with him, away from the craziness of true crime. So have a great weekend, and I will see you all next week. Until then, stay vigilant, stay curious. Mama Mystery out.